Shalom, welcome to ASJTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Elsie Friedlin, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Elizabeth Friedlin, Erwin Friedlin, Myron Friedlin, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Seb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolat. This is a very critical time for us. It's truly a period of historic change now. As we're doing this program, on the morning in which we're doing this program, we receive news that Idit Silman, who is the head of the coalition government, she runs the coalition government majority in the Knesset. She has resigned and has joined the opposition Likud party. She made a deal with Netanyahu and is joining his opposition Likud party. So the government coalition that had 61 seats in a 120-seat Knesset, 120 seats in the Knesset, Knesset being the Israeli parliament, the current Israeli government had 61 seats, and she's now resigned and joined the opposition, so now they have 60 seats. They only have 60. They don't have a majority anymore. It's now dead even. So the government can easily fall, and that would mean new elections. In the meantime, the government is trying to solicit the support of another Arab Jew-hating party in the Knesset, because Arab Jew-hating parties are allowed to serve in the Knesset. Parties that call for the destruction of Israel and support Arab terrorism, they're allowed to serve in the Knesset. Only true Kahanists are not allowed to serve in the Knesset. And so there's a tremendous period of government uncertainty. There's a tremendous opportunity here, and there's a tremendous danger for us over here. This is a critical time, because if the government falls and Netanyahu takes power, Benjamin Netanyahu is going to resurrect the Trump-Netanyahu so-called peace plan, which is a plan to create a so-called Palestinian state in more than 90% of Judea and Samaria and parts of pre-1967 Israel, a plan for national suicide. Israel would go back to borders that are 6 to 9 miles wide, completely insane. And because Netanyahu and Trump proposed it, the majority of Israelis would go along with it. So God forbid, chas v'chalila, that's a very dangerous possibility. On the other hand, you have this current government of Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid and Benny Gantz, this current government, which is ruling together with Arab parties that want to destroy Israel. So the danger here from either side is tremendous. We're at a critical point where the balance of power and the tipping point is coming into play, where the future of the land of Israel is at stake here. It is critical that we support the Hilltop Youth at this time. They're the only people on our side who are actually doing something. The Arabs, throughout all this, are building frantically. Just in the past month or two, they built huge new homes and structures and are taking over land and building highways and just illegally seizing more and more land in Judea and Samaria, and creating a so-called Palestinian state and everything but name, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians. That's a historic bluff and lie. But despite that, the danger of creating a so-called Palestinian state and of getting Israel to go to pre-1967 borders that are 6 to 9 miles wide, that danger is very, very real. And Jews don't even realize what danger this is. I think Jews are afraid of the current government. They're afraid the current government might do that, which is true, which that might happen. But I don't think they realize that if Netanyahu and the Likud are in power, the danger is even greater of an agreement like that, because the majority of Israelis then would accept it, whereas now, under this government, which is regarded as a left-wing government, the majority of Israelis would not accept it. So either way, we're looking at tremendous danger. And there's only one thing on the ground that we can do. One thing where you can really influence what's going on. Not by supporting this political party or that political party. That's not going to change things. Because both of the political party, both of the factions, the Likud and the current government, both of them, the opposition and the government, both stand for things that are terrible and that will lead to the downfall an Israeli presence in Judea and Samaria, Israel's biblical heartland. The only thing you can do to create an obstacle to a Palestinian state now, the only thing we can do to stop this is to support the hilltop youth. Noar HaGevaot in Hebrew, the hilltop youth. They are the one group that is fighting to take as much land as possible for the Jews. Do you want the Jews to get more land, or do you want the Arabs to seize our land? The more strategic land that the Jews are able to seize, the more strategic land that the Jews are able to take control of before the Arabs take control, the more there will be an obstacle to the creation of a Palestinian state, and the more secure we will be, the more hope we will have for preventing this national catastrophe, which is very real and can happen very quickly before we know it, unless we take action. You know, it's really, and it's really pathetic, because the Likud and Netanyahu that so many Jews put their hope in, the Likud and Netanyahu, they froze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria for more than 10 years, for more than a decade. They were the worst enemies of the Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria in Israeli history. And yet Israelis put their hope in them. There is no hope in that. The only hope is on the ground, to build as much as possible and create as much as possible. You know, where the 400,000 Jews reside, there are 400,000 Jews in settlement clusters. Where they reside, there's no talk about giving up that land. That's going to stay Jewish. But that's only 2.5% of Judea and Samaria. That's the problem. The only ones who are expanding beyond that 2.5% are the hilltop youth. So we've got to help. We've got to help. This is the moment of truth. This is a critical time. It's amazing that the most critical cause and the best cause and the most noble cause of our time, the hilltop youth, receives such little support, and that so few Jews even know about how critical and important this is. It's amazing. It's amazing. What a sad situation we face. And the noble inspiration of the hilltop youth, that's the only thing that can give us hope for turning this situation around. But obviously they're fighting against the odds. As we've said on this program many times, we send them roughly $400,000 a year. And on an annual basis, I mean, we've been supporting them with our entire budget for the past 9 months so far. 9 months ago, we decided we're going to contribute our entire budget to this, and we started moving in because we saw the emergency situation that had been created. We saw this was an absolute emergency. We always wanted to support them and always back them, but 9 months ago, we realized we had come to a critical point. We had to support them urgently. So now we give them a whole budget, which is roughly on an annual basis, would be $400,000 a year. We haven't given them $400,000 a year because it's only 9 months so far that we're giving them our entire budget. But it comes to a total of about $400,000 a year. You know what $400,000 a year is against hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent by the UN, by the European Union, by the Arab League, by the so-called Palestinian Authority to build illegal Arab building all over Judea and Samaria? Do you know what odds we're fighting against? And of course, aside from the $400,000 that we give them, the Hilltop Youth themselves have a fundraising apparatus in Israel. In Israel, they have their own funds which people could contribute to. So in Israel itself, they also raise money. But we came in and we pretty much, I think, almost doubled what they get every year by giving them our entire budget. Because outside of Israel, they were raising virtually nothing. And there is no organization outside of Israel that gives them any money other than us. So this is the point where history will be decided and where all of us can make a critical difference. This is the time where you have to help and help more than ever. And this is the time where we need your prayers. We need your support. We need you to decide, I'm going to devote time on the internet and spread the word of JTF to other people and make sure that other people know about JTF. And I'm going to give out of my own pocket to help JTF with this campaign. All of this is necessary at this time, urgently necessary. So hopefully people will realize how much is at stake here. If we only had another $1 million a year, it would make a tremendous difference, even though with another $1 million a year, we'd still be outgunned many, many times over. They have hundreds of millions. And if we were spending $1 million or $1.5 million a year, We're still outgunned 200 to 1, 300 to 1. But because of the ingenuity and the creativity and the devotion and sacrifice of these heroic hilltop youth, they're able with hundreds of people, because they're only a few hundred of them on these dozens of hilltops, and with only a few hundred people, they are able to take large areas of land and use and graze on it. And where they are, the Arabs can't come. They can't come on that land where the hilltop youth are present. So this is our hope. This is our hope. And the Israeli government and the Israeli media and the Israeli courts and the Israeli police and the army are all against the hilltop youth. It's insanity. They all say, we have no choice. We have to give in to pressure. We have no choice. We have plenty of choice. This would be insanity to give up Judea and Samaria. And if you agree, you have to help us. This is the time. This is the moment of truth when you have to help us. Help us financially and help spread the word about JTF. This is the time, the moment of truth. And I don't know if there are going to be new elections. If there are new elections, that will be at least several months of electioneering. And during that time, we've got to build and take as much as we can take. Because on the ground, facts are going to be created by the Arabs on the ground, and we better create our own facts if we're going to stop this. If we're going to stop this insanity. So this is what's at stake. By the way, JTF, just to give an example of the things JTF is doing, they're having a big happening. They're meeting hundreds of hilltop youth, and their supporters are going to be meeting during Pesach, during Chol HaMoed Pesach, on one of the hilltops, on Ramat Migron, which is one of the really great hilltops. They're going to have a happening there with music and during the intermediate days of Pesach. Who's paying for it, of course? JTF. If we weren't there to finance it, they wouldn't be able to do it. They didn't have it last year. Last Pesach, they didn't have this. They wanted to have an event last year. They couldn't afford it. JTF is financing that. They have a tour. Tour means a column. They have a column on page 8 of Olam Katan, which is a highly respected Shabbat newsletter and newspaper. It's called Olam Katan, which means little world. A little world. That's the name of the newspaper, but it's highly respected. And the Hilltop Youth now have a column there where they reach tens of thousands of readers, maybe more than that. Maybe I might be underestimating, but at least tens of thousands, probably more, in Judea and Samaria that receive this newsletter. And so their message gets across, and the media sees their message. And they have events going on and building going on. We have building going on all the time. JTF is funding their building. We have two full-time people there that we pay their salaries every month. Salaries. What a joke. They're devoting their lives. They hilltop youth just enough to have to eat and have clothes and a roof over their heads. We pay the bare minimum they need just to survive. But without JTF, they wouldn't be able to do it. And they're building. And they build full time. That's all they do, and they're experts at building. The Hilltop Youth are experts at building. They're experts at repairing their cars and pickup trucks and their tractors, and experts at raising animals and at creating things. If they didn't have Jewish brains here and Jewish expertise and ingenuity and creativity, we wouldn't have a shot. But they have all of that. These are young Jews, and they're brilliant, and they're creative, and they're fantastic, wonderful people, and very brave. And so we've got to move here and support them and back them up and let them know that their fight is our fight, because everything is at stake in this battle. Everything is at stake. And you know in JTF we always spoke about how we wanted to be in a situation where we can actually make a decisive difference. For the past 9 months, JTF has been in that situation now. We're now on the front line. We're funding the front line of the battle against a so-called Palestinian state. We are now in the driver's seat as far as making a difference. And we want to put you in that driver's seat. The Hilltop Youth, you're not doing a favor for the Hilltop Youth if you give them your support. They're doing you a favor. Because on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, you'll be blessed for having worked, for having given for the land of Israel. And by the way, you know, in the beginning of the program, we also elevate, we have, if you notice that we have a refuah shlema message for people who need a recovery, who have some illness or need a recovery. And we also have a message of ilui neshamot for people who passed away that are very dear to us. If you have people that you know that you love very much that passed away and you want to elevate their souls, this will elevate their souls. Squared. This is the ultimate way to elevate their souls because this is the ultimate good cause to give to. And unlike other organizations, this is a pure cause. All of our money goes to this. Nobody gets a salary to sit in an office and get a salary. If we fund people like the builders, we're just funding enough so that they can eat and have clothes on their back and build day and night, and they live on bare, bare minimum. Because they just, otherwise they'd be starving, and they just wouldn't be able to do it. So, this is the project that we're part of. We are on the front line. We are funding the front line. And tragically, we're the only ones doing it from outside of Israel. So we need your help. We need your help, and we need it badly. There are two ways that you can help JTF and help the Hill, really help the Hilltop Youth. There are two ways you can do this. You can do it online, or you can do it by sending it through the regular mail. If you want to do it online, you just go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and you click on the donate button in English on top. Most of the page is in Hebrew, obviously, but there's an English, big English button, donate button on top. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can very conveniently donate to help the Hilltop Youth and to do this important thing for the land of Israel. That's online. And if you prefer to send, if you prefer to do it through the regular mail, sending checks and money orders, you can send a check and money order made out to JTF. And you send the check and you send the checks or money orders to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. This is the moment of truth. This is the moment of truth. The Hilltop Youth are counting on you. And the land of Israel and the people of Israel, they don't even know it, most of the people of Israel, but they're also counting on you. They don't know it. Someday they will. Someday they'll understand how much this, how important this was. But you do understand, and so you have to be there to make a difference. Okay, let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers this week, and we start out with the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks great questions, and Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, it seems clear from Kesef Mishneh on Hilchot Avodat Kochavim, chapter 10, that Rambam rules that nowadays if a Gentile wants to act as a Ger Toshav by keeping the Noahide code, Jews should not prevent him from living in Israel. Do you know of any Noahide communities in Israel? Unquote. You're absolutely right, Hirvatsky. It's not just Harambam that rules that because Harambam is one of the great commentators of all time, but he's one commentator. On this issue, what he's saying is the halacha, the accepted halacha from the commentators across the board, that Bnei Noach, Gentiles who follow the seven laws, who sincerely follow and believe in the seven laws of Bnei Noach, who believe in God and believe that God gave these laws to the Jewish people and to the righteous Gentiles, people who really believe in that and who believe that God gave the Torah to the Jewish people in Mount Sinai, Gentiles who believe in that and who follow those laws are indeed welcome to live in the land of Israel. In fact, those are really the only Gentiles that are allowed to live in the land of Israel, Gentiles who follow the seven laws under true halakha, under true, unfortunately, we don't have a country that is ruled under Jewish law, unfortunately. But if there was Jewish law, if there was Jewish biblical religious law in Israel, the only Gentiles that would be allowed to live in Israel would be the Bnei Noach, would be the people who follow the seven laws of Noach, because that is the prerequisite for the right to live in the land of Israel. So you're quite correct that that is Jewish law. That's the halakha. I do not know of any Noahide communities in Israel. I don't think that they have any actual communities there. I wish there were more Noahides to actually have communities there. I don't know of any. I can tell you that I did, when I was in Israel, the last time I was in Israel, before I was in Israel for 24 hours in 1996 and they threw me out, but I'm talking about the last time that I got through the airport and actually spent time in Israel. I spent 10 weeks in Israel, 2.5 months in 1994. And the judge gave me permission, even though I was on probation, but he said, you have to come back. But he let me stay there for 2.5 months on a visit. And I went there for 2.5 months in 1994. And I was staying with the founder of the B'nai Noach movement in the United States, Wendell Jones. He had a one-room home, a very simple one-room place in Judea and Samaria, in Yehuda, in Judea. And he gave it to me to stay there for 2.5 months. He gave it to me. I mean, we were good friends because the reason we're good friends with Wendell Jones and with his son, by the way, converted to Judaism, and his other sons are B'nai Noach, but he himself has passed away since then. Alav HaShalom, may peace be upon him. He was a wonderful person. The story of Wendell Jones, why he created the Noahide movement. He wanted to create a Noahide movement. He believed, he originally was a Christian, but he recognized that Christianity was a false religion, and he wanted to adopt the Noahide laws. So he wrote to 70 rabbis, and he said, I'm going to have a conference in Dallas, Texas, and I need your support, and I need your help, and what do I do? And some of the rabbis answered him politely with form letters and just politely answered him. But not in a serious way. The only rabbi out of the 70 who answered him in a very serious way and said, you're doing a wonderful job and I envy you because you are volunteers. I was born Jewish, but you're volunteers. The one rabbi who did that and who really was really inspirational and answered him in a serious way was, of course, our great leader, Morenu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. Our great beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, may God avenge his blood and may his memory be immortalized. Rabbi Kahana answered him very seriously and went to speak at his conference that he held in Dallas and spoke at the made very inspiring speeches to the Noahides and was really one of the inspirations for the movement in the United States. And so, being the head of the JDL, when I went there, when I was able to go there, and I could have stayed in the yeshiva, and there were other places I could have stayed, but he wanted to give me the place to stay. He said, no, come here, stay here, please. You know, and he wouldn't accept. I wanted to pay him for it. He wouldn't accept it. You know, he was just, what a great person, just an absolute magnificent person. And so I stayed in the one-room place that he had there, and that's where I stayed for 10 weeks. And I got to meet some of the B'nai Noach that were there at the time, some people from his family mainly, and it was certainly a wonderful experience. Most of their children in the end converted in the end to Judaism, which happens with a lot of B'nai Noach. But there are some who don't, and B'nai Noach are not required to convert. They're not required to convert. They can have a place in eternal life in the next world without converting. They're absolutely not required. So that's what I saw in Israel, and it was, you know, and the B'nai Noach are so normal. You don't see B'nai Noach saying we should give up land and we should have a Palestinian state and you don't see crazy people. They're not crazy like some of these self-hating Jews. You just don't see that. The B'nai Noach are all loyal to the land of Israel. They're all wonderful people. They all love Rabbi Kahana. They all loved Rabbi Kahana. So, you know, it was just such a pleasure seeing such normal people there. When I have so much, because so much of my life I have to deal with crazy people, with these self-hating Jews who are insane. Anyway, thank you, Chirvatsky. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion of interfaith Passover seders and seders hosted by Goyim? My opinion is I don't like them. They mock our faith and heritage. Unquote. I agree with you completely, Chicago Jew. You can't have interfaith Passover seders. What, are you going to have seders with Christians who pray to a human being whom they believe was God? They believe the human being was God, or the Son of God, or God, or part of the Godhead. This is idolatry. Or you're going to have Muslims there who believe in a religion that calls for the extermination of the Jewish people? What type of Passover seder? What type of crazy thing can this possibly be? So of course this should not happen. Of course it should not happen. It is a mockery of our faith and heritage. Chicago Jew, we agree. Thank you very much. And now we go to Kahana Will Always Be Right, who asks interesting questions and asks me to comment on, and he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. He says, comment on, and then 6 names. Okay, I'll try my best, whatever little I know about all of these people, whatever little I remember. I'm doing it from memory. Comment on Marilyn Monroe. Well, of course, Marilyn Monroe was a very tragic figure who was a sex idol in the United States, a blonde sex idol. And she, like all Hollywood people, she was in Hollywood, she was an actress, and she was a singer, and she slept with many people in order to get ahead. And in the end, she died of a drug overdose. By the way, she had an affair in the White House with President Kennedy, while his wife, Jacqueline Kennedy, was in the next room. So pretty disgusting. Imagine to sleep with a woman in an adulterous affair while your wife is in the next room. I mean, how immoral, how evil, how disgusting, how cruel to do that to your wife. That was President Kennedy. And President Kennedy's brother, another animal, Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, also had an affair with her. So she slept with both, with the two Kennedy brothers, and she slept with many other people, and in the end she died of a drug overdose. Terrible story. The next is Audrey Hepburn, who of course was the famous actress, a very, very successful actress. She was a tremendous success and completely immoral, like almost all of these Hollywood people. Completely immoral. Aside from the fact that, you know, she was married to Spencer Tracy, and she cheated on him a million times over, and he cheated on her, you know, notoriously. And by the way, the test for if these people have any morality, Audrey Hepburn was very famous and very successful, with huge blockbuster movie successes and all types of awards from Hollywood during the Holocaust. Did she do anything during the Holocaust? Did she help? Was she part of the... Nothing, of course. Just so that you'll know about her immorality. But she did help another organization in life for many years. She was a big, big supporter and a big helper of UNICEF, the UN Nazi organization that raises money for Arab terrorists. They claim to be raising money for so-called Arab refugees. They raise money for the Arab terrorists and help the Arab terrorists, and work with the Arab terrorists against Israel, and of course for other evil, the UNICEF also does other evil things in Africa and other places, helping all the evil people. And that's what Audrey Hepburn devoted many years of her life to raising money for. That was her cause, her organization. Then you ask about Betty Davis. She was also a tremendous success, one of the most famous actresses in Hollywood history. And she never did anything good with it. She lived an immoral Hollywood life. And again, Betty Davis was very successful and very famous during the Holocaust. Did nothing. She didn't help Ben Hecht and didn't help the other people. She wasn't part of that. She never did anything. She never did anything really good or moral in her life. Despite her tremendous fame and her ability, her fame and money and power and her ability to do good, she could have done a lot of good during the Holocaust. And then you ask about Lauren Bacall. Okay, this is now a self-hating Jew. The ones you've asked about so far, Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn, Betty Davis, none of them were Jewish, but Lauren Bacall was Jewish. She was a self-hating Jewess. She intermarried twice. Of course, both of her husbands were not Jewish. One of them was Humphrey Bogart, the famous actor. Then she married Jason Robarts, another famous actor. Both of them were not Jewish. This Jewish actress did nothing to help the Jews during the Holocaust, absolutely nothing. But she was very active on behalf of all types of left-wing causes during the McCarthy era, defending communists and defending leftists and defending all types of left-wing causes. You know, that she was very active with. Then you ask about Judy Garland. Judy Garland, another tragic figure. She was a very talented singer, and she was an actress and a singer. She died in her 40s from a drug overdose. That was her great life. And her children, very troubled children, and just all her daughter had to get divorced from her husband because the daughter used to beat up the husband. I mean, just an insane life. And her husband, Judy Garland, she caught her husband in bed with another man. I mean, just Hollywood is the ultimate sewer. And finally, you ask about the Kardashians. Oh boy. Well, we end off with the ultimate slime, the Kardashians. All three of the Kardashian children, I'm calling them children, they're adults, they're in their, they're all young adults, but all three of the famous Kardashians, all of them are either married to or having affairs and living with and having children with blacks, with black rappers and the slime and scum of the earth. And these are white Armenians, and they sleep with and have children with and marry blacks, all three of them. That's what they prefer, blacks. Black white haters and Jew haters and rappers who glorify gang life and who glorify murder and rape and drug dealing. That's who they sleep with. Thank you very much. Kahana will always be right. So as you see, Hollywood is as low as you can get. And now we go to our friend Am Raphael, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, it seems that Hashem put Ramadan and Good Friday during Sfirot to test our faith. Can you discuss the spiritual difference of the tragedies that occurred and occur specifically between Passover and Shavuot, such as plagues, crusades, inquisitions, and pogroms? What special steps should Israelis do to protect themselves during the Sfirah? Well, the most special thing that you can do right now that Israelis should do is support the Hilltop Youth. That's what all of us should be doing. That brings blessing from God. Believe me, they're those are the type of Jews that would bring blessing and protection from God. why do we have Sfirat HaOmer? Why do we have this period where we count? There's a 50-day period of counting. Why do we do this? Because Rabbi Akiva, he had 24,000 students. And his 24,000 students were going to go out and bring great spiritual uplifting to the entire Jewish people and uplift them and bring the final redemption. All 24,000 died. All 24,000 died, and it says that it was because they had sinat chinam. Sinat chinam means needless hatred toward each other. There was hatred and pettiness and hatred toward each other, and because of that, they ended up all dying. A terrible, terrible tragedy for the Jewish people, and we had an opportunity to bring the final redemption. Imagine 24,000 inspirational, brilliant rabbinic sages, very charismatic, very knowledgeable rabbinic sages. Can you imagine if they had gone out and had gone out and uplifted the entire Jewish people, what that could have done, what that would have led to? And we lost that opportunity. So it's a terrible tragedy, and because of that, we have a period in which we don't listen to most music, most types of music we don't listen to, and there are all types of things that we do to remember and commemorate this period every year, which begins during the Pesach holiday, right after the beginning of the Pesach holiday. Thank you, Am Raphael. And we go now to our friend Yemach Shmora Islam, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, when Britney Spears said, I'm not that innocent in one of her nauseating songs, she wasn't kidding, unquote. We have a lot of posts this week about disgusting, immoral people, and she certainly is unbelievably disgusting, unbelievably immoral, just pure slime, Absolutely. Mashmur Islam, you're absolutely right. Thank you. And now we go to Zera Yisrael Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim on Queens Public TV, who would you describe as your main opposition to your show and who would be your supporters, unquote. Well, the opposition to the show are the type of people who hate our message, who you know, the vast majority of black people, Muslims, of course, and other self-hating Jews, self-hating whites. Those are the type of people who detested our program and wanted to get us off the air when we were on Queens Public TV. By the way, we're on Queens Public TV. We're also on public TV in Manhattan and Brooklyn. We were on in the three boroughs that constitute more than 80% of New York City's population. So we had a big audience. We were on in a wide range of areas with a big audience. Our supporters were either Jews who wanted to help Israel and the Jewish people, or righteous Gentiles who liked our message and were committed to helping Israel and the Jewish people, and understood that it's good for the United States as well when we help Israel and the Jewish people. Not with foreign aid, by the way. U.S. foreign aid is bad for Israel, and there should never be foreign aid to any country. But supporting Israel, not with foreign aid, not with cash handout. We don't want cash, we don't want handouts, we don't want any of that. We just don't want the United States to pressure Israel to commit suicide. We want the United States to stay out of it and say, we support Israel because God says you're supposed to support Israel, and that's it, and stay out of it. That would be the best situation. Thank you, Zera Yisrael Kahanist. And now we go to our friend Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes, Ram Hayakar. And Ram is going to tell us something briefly in Hebrew. I'm going to quickly translate and quickly translate and answer in Hebrew, and of course translate. Shalom Chaim, ma datcha al 11 beAPRIL shenase mifkash zoom shel shalu et hayamin amiti nase mifkash zoom nosefet ki zekef venechmad sheani oselecha chasifa vekahal ma datcha ishit. Okay, and he asks if we can do a Zoom in Hebrew Zoom on April 11th. Ram, letzari, ב-11 באפריל אני עסוק במשהו שאני חייב לטפל בו, אני לא יכול לעשות את זה, אבל אנחנו נחיה ונראה בעזרת השם בעתיד, אני מקווה שנוכל לעשות, אני מקווה, בעזרת השם. And I just told him on April 11th, I'm busy with something, I can't do it, but I'm hoping in the future we'll be able to do it. And Ram now writes, and I quote, Yesh echad shekorim lo Alex Zeitlin mehayutub sherotze lerayen otcha barut shelo kimo sheasa Johnny bizmano haim ata be'ad. And now Ram asked me about someone named Alex Zeitlin, who by the way has a large YouTube channel in Hebrew. He's a Russian Jew who made Aliyah and has a very large channel, and he wants to interview me about what we did for Soviet Jewry. And in fact, we already have an interview scheduled later this month after Pesach. We're going to have an interview scheduled. Ram Kimosha Tayodea by 27 leAPRIL Yereayon Etzel Alex. וזה בגללך. אתה עשית את זה, רם. אתה עשית את זה. איזו מצווה. אתה עוזר לנו להפיץ את המסר של נוער הגבעות וגם של התנועה הכהניסטית. איזו מצווה, רם. זה בגללך, בזכותך. And I just told him, thanks to you, Ram, we now have an interview. You arranged it. Ram arranges a lot of interviews for us and a lot of publicity for us in Israel and does a great job. שאני אקשר ביניכם, שהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך באהבת ישראל, רם מאיר אברהם. רם, אני מודה לך, אתה עושה הרבה טוב בשבילנו, ואני מודה לך, שהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך וישמור עליך, רם. Okay, and now let's go to Chabad Kahanist, another very good friend of ours, who writes, and I quote, do you think that the current flood of Ukrainians into Israel will mean more votes for Conrad, Yvette, and Arel Beitenu, unquote. Okay. Yvette is Yvette Lieberman, and he runs a political party that wants an end to the Jewish state. They want to bring in all Russian non-Jews into the Jewish state, Russian Jew-hating, not Cossacks, Jew-hating Cossacks into the Jewish state, who have no connection to Israel or the Jewish people, and they want to bring that in, and that's his support, and that's supporters of his party, as well as all types of self-hating Jews that support him. Again, his name is Yvette Lieberman. That's what Chabad Kahanas is referring to, a complete disgusting pig, who's now the unfortunate minister, the treasury minister. And he calls it, and he calls the party, Chabad Kahanas calls it Arel Beitenu, instead of Yisrael Beitenu. The party is actually called in Hebrew Yisrael Beitenu, which means Israel is our home. A very unfitting name for a party that wants to dismantle the Jewish state. But anyway, they call it Israel is our home. And Chabad Kahanas is calling it Arel Beitenu. Arel Beitenu means uncircumcised is our home. In other words, Chabad Kahanas is mentioning the fact that they want to de-Judaize the Jewish state and dismantle the Jewish state. Chabad Kahanas now writes, and I quote, "How long do you think it will be before this disastrous government collapses?" Unquote. It might be pretty soon. It might be pretty soon with the resignation that we saw today, the day we're doing this program of Idit Silman. It might come pretty soon. And it is a disastrous government, but Chabad Kahanas, Netanyahu also had a disastrous government. All the governments are disastrous. We want elections. We want all the time we'd like to have elections. When there are elections, the politicians are afraid to do really, really bad things. So it gives us at least a breathing space of a few months. We want elections. We want constant, I'd like to see constant elections. I like when there's chaos and they have to have constant elections. Because when the politicians have stability and there's a stable government, that's when they do bad things. That's when they have the ability to impose bad things on us. When there are elections, they're worried about the voters. There, at least we have a chance to apply political pressure. Thank you, Chabad Kahanas. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, I wish you and your family a very happy Passover. What are your favorite Passover traditions? Also, what is your favorite part of the Passover story? Do you like the film The Ten Commandments? Thanks." Okay, Joe, thank you, and I wish you and your loved ones a very happy and good Passover as well, Joe. I love the Passover Seder, of course, the Passover traditions. I love the Passover Seder. I love it. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful part of our Jewish tradition, and I always look forward to it. What's my favorite part of the Passover story? I think, of course, the 10 plagues. Eser Makot Mitzrayim, the 10 plagues. Because our enemies finally get a taste of what they were doing. They were murdering our firstborn and murdering us. And our enemies finally get a taste of the same thing. And I also like Kriyat, when we had Kriyat Yam Suf. Kriyat Yam Suf is the crossing of the Red Sea and the miracle, that incredible miracle. I think that those are such beautiful, breathtaking, what breathtaking, beautiful miracles. Magnificent. I love it. Thank you very much, Joe. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, our good friend, who writes, and I quote, 2 weeks ago I asked, why do blacks with affirmative action names... Why do they have to pick blacks affirmative action names to be the first black to hold a specific position? Not why do blacks have those names, Jesse Jackson, Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, affirmative action blacks with real English names, as opposed to Kentaji Brown Jackson, who was both affirmative action, has affirmative action name. So why do they pick blacks with real English? Why don't they pick blacks with real English names to the first black to hold a specific position? Unquote. They prefer blacks with these crazy names, Binyamin, because this is more of a revolt against Western society and the United States and whitey and the Jews. You know, this is their little revolt. Remember how excited they were to have someone named Barack Hussein Osama as president of the United States? Why didn't they pick somebody with a name like Jesse Jackson or like Leroy Jones? Mm-hmm. How come they didn't pick someone like that? Instead, they picked Barack Hussein Osama, and that they love that. And the self-hating whites and the self-hating Jews love the fact, oh, we're electing someone named Barack Hussein Osama. Oh, how wonderful, how historic, how they love it. The more insane, the more bizarre, the more anti-white and anti-Semitic it is, the more they think that we're doing something historic here. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote, discuss the following blacks. Magic Johnson, that's of course the famous or infamous basketball player, of course, who was diagnosed with AIDS 30 years ago. This is someone who is living with a woman, he has a child. I don't even know if he's married to the woman, but he's living with a woman, has a child, and he's going around having anal sex with other men, because that's how you get AIDS. He was having anal sex with other men while he's married to a woman, and of course that can infect his wife by doing that. Because of the frantic search for a cure, he's still alive 30 years later. AIDS used to kill people automatically. Everybody with AIDS automatically died. Now, 30 years later, he's still alive because they found the medicines to cure. They didn't do that. They didn't make a frantic search to find medicines to cure strokes and heart attacks and diabetes and blindness and deafness and Alzheimer's and what other diseases and cancer. They did almost nothing for those diseases compared to what they did to find cures so that someone like Magic Johnson can continue to live and continue to have anal sex with other men. Disgusting. Disgusting, disgusting, disgusting. Let's go to the next one. Karim Abdul Jabbar. Okay, this is the black Muslim football player. You know, these blacks, they have to convert to Islam. They originally were Christians because they were slaves in the United States, so they were Christians, but they adopt Islam to rebel against the West and rebel against whites and Jews and, you know, to show their rebellion. But they're adopting the religion of those who were the cruelest to them as slave traders and who started the slave trade. The real people who started the slave trade were the Muslims. Farrakhan has started this lie that the Jews started the slave trade. The Jews themselves were slaves in ghettos of Europe when this happened. But the reality is that Farrakhan and all these black Muslim dogs are embracing the religion that enslaved their people and has started slavery. What sick, ignorant cockroaches. Binyamin now writes, and I quote, Cleopatra Jefferson. Oh, Cleopatra Jefferson, she was someone that I needed I was supposed to get a refund because the company did something wrong to me, and I was supposed to get a refund, and the manager in the company was Cleopatra Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And she got on the phone with me, and the person who originally I got on the phone with was a white guy from Tennessee who was very nice, very polite, wanted to give me the refund, but he said the manager insisted that she has to approve all refunds, even though they were supposed to give it to me. In writing, they were supposed to give it to me. And she gave me so he put the manager on, she came on, and she gave me a very hard time. And finally I spoke to the vice president of the company. I finally got the refund in the end. She refused to give it to me. I finally got the refund in the end by speaking to the vice president of the company, who was also a nice white guy from Tennessee. But, and I remember saying to him, you know, he said to me, but it's in writing. Why didn't she give you the refund? I told him that I read to her what it says, that it's supposed to be in writing, and she wouldn't give me the refund. And he said, well, what did she say when you read to her? I said, well, I don't know how else to put this, but you know, when I read to her what it says, she just went ape. That's what I told the vice president of the company, that, you know. But anyway, that was Cleopatra Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And by the way, she said to me, you know, everything I said to her, she'd go, mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. And when she wanted to deny me the refund, she'd say, mm-mm, That's the level of her vocabulary, and she was in charge of the entire customer service department of this company. All right, next person on the list from Binyamin's list is Brasilia. This is a story where I was once on a bus. I'm sitting on the bus, and all of a sudden, this black woman comes and sits next to me. 300-pound black woman. She comes and sits next to me, and you know, I'm a skinny guy, so she was going to crush me to death. Anyway, she sits next to me, and you know, with a giant, I never saw anything like this. This giant. I don't know if it was a tray or looked like a tray or a bucket of French fries. Giant thing of French fries. I don't know how any human being could eat so much. And you know, French fries are very unhealthy, clogging of the arteries and heart attack and stroke. And the worst thing you can eat is that garbage. Anything fried. Fried food is the worst thing you can eat. But anyway, Brasilia. Well, anyway, she sits next to me, and then she screams. We're in the front of the bus, and she screams at the back of the bus at her friend who was sitting in the back of the bus, and screams, "Brasilia, you want some French fries?" Mm-hmm. And then Brasilia came over, and the two of them were dipping the French fries in mayonnaise. You know, and I wanted to. Anyway, let's go on. I don't want to, because it's making me sick just thinking about it. Wow, that was disgusting. Just really, the two of them were going, mm-hmm, oh yeah, girl, oh, I love them French fries. Mm-hmm. You know, the two of them were eating their French fries. Oh, it was really, really grotesque. Okay, next is Kobe Bryant. Oh, Kobe Bryant, the rapist who got away with it because he's Kobe Bryant. But he raped a woman. Not, you know, the woman was a beast because she went to the hotel room with him to have sex with him. But he wanted to have anal sex, and so he forcibly had anal sex with her. And because that's what black people love, everything anal. Because that's where their brains are. But anyway, he got off. He was able to get off, of course, with big attorney and the media's on his side and everybody's on his side. This rapist. All of a sudden, by the way, the people who are supposed to be for women's rights, and all of a sudden, when it comes to Schwarzer rapists, all of a sudden we don't hear about women's rights anymore. Anyway, thankfully Kobe Bryant is getting his now, and we'll get his justice for all the terrible things he did. Thank you, Binyamin, and we now go to our good friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, is there any support in Chazal for the Hasidic philosophy of Macht Yisrael in Golis?" Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. Golis in Hebrew is actually Galut, which means exile, in the exile. Macht Yisrael, that means creating Israel. I'm pretty sure that's what it means, making Israel in the Galut. I'm assuming that's what it means. I don't speak Yiddish, Kalman. So, you know, I speak Hebrew, but I do not speak Yiddish. But I think that's what it means. And that's Chabad and the Lubavitcher Rebbe and others said that you can make Crown Heights and you make the Galut just like Israel, you know, which is absolutely not supported by anyone in Chazal at all. We are required to live in Eretz Yisrael. Required. The vast majority of the commandments the mitzvot can only be carried out in Eretz Yisrael. The redemption can only come in Eretz Yisrael. Not in Crown Heights, not in Muncie, not in Williamsburg, not in any of these other places, Borough Park. The redemption can only come in Eretz Yisrael. And we saw what happened to the Jews who didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael during the Holocaust, tragically. The Jews who listened to the rabbis who said, you're not supposed to go, they went to Auschwitz, and the Jews who did go to Eretz Yisrael survived. So, we saw the consequences. So, there is no support for that. We are required to live in the land of Israel. There is no future for the Jewish people outside of Israel. The Jews don't deserve to have a future outside of Israel. They don't deserve anything outside of Israel. They're committing a terrible sin. The land of Israel is where we belong. And that's the only place where there will be a future and where there will be redemption for the Jewish people. Thank you, Kalman. By the way, Lubavitcher Rebbe told the Jews in Crown Heights that they're not allowed to leave Crown Heights. They're not allowed. If you live in Crown Heights, you must stay. You're not allowed to leave Crown Heights. We mustn't abandon this community. You have to stay in Crown Heights. And he did that with other communities too in the Galut. He never said you're not allowed to leave the land of Israel. They actually encouraged people to leave sometimes. Imagine to encourage people to leave the land of Israel and come. Jews who were born in Eretz Yisrael, Jews speaking Hebrew from birth and being part of the natural, beautiful process of Jews living in their homeland and dragging them to Brooklyn? Wow. And, you know, and again, I'm not against Lubavitch. I'm not against them. They are nice Jews and they do a lot of wonderful things. And I do love them as my fellow Jews. They're not evil people at all. Like some of them, I mean, there are Jews who are evil. The Lubavitch are not evil people at all. But this thing with not having to live in Israel is really, really a problem. Thank you, Kalman. And we go now to our friend Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, "Hi Chaim. One, I just about give up on informing my many Jewish friends and colleagues about the plight of the hilltop Israelis. They seem to have no interest, unfortunately. So frustrating to convey the importance of preventing a 5-mile wide Israel to them. They act like Brooklyn is the new Israel. I think I will raise money with the Gentiles now," unquote. Okay, I hope you can, Italian Zionist. You see, Italian Zionist is trying to figure out ways to raise money for the hilltop youth. That should embarrass Jews who are hearing this who are not doing the same. But anyway, Italian Zionist, I appreciate that. And, you know, what can I say? What can I say? It's, you know, if the media is not saying that it's a noble cause, like helping the Ukrainian Nazis, people don't want to give. You know, it should be the opposite. When the media promotes a cause, our antenna should go up and we should say, whoa, because we know the media is evil. And when they promote causes, they almost always are on the wrong side. Now Italian Zionist writes, and I quote, "2. Genesis 18:16-33 recounts the story. Abraham asked God if he would destroy the city if there were 50 righteous people in it. God replies no, so Abraham gradually reduces the number until he reaches 10. Yes, that's true. And but Italian Zionist, when Abraham saw... Two points. Number one, when Abraham saw, this was in Stom, in Sodom. We're talking about the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. When Abraham saw that there weren't at least 10 righteous people, he was not against destroying the cities. He was in favor of destroying the cities. But if there were righteous people there, that would be a different story. The only righteous people in the cities were Lot, his nephew, and Lot's wife, and Lot's two daughters. That was it. And their husbands, but their husbands refused to leave in the end. But that was it. And so when Abraham saw that, he wasn't against the destruction of the cities at all. And by the way, the cities were destroyed entirely, men, women, and children. Okay, I know that sounds in the Western society and Western world, but that's what God did, and Abraham was not opposed to it when he saw there were no righteous people there. And just another point to make there. I think that's good enough. Okay, now we go on. Italian Zionist writes, "Now I am in no way defending Ukrainian Nazis who should be destroyed. Would you think the Torah verse above applies to Ukraine? Wouldn't you think there are at least a few righteous people in Ukraine? I was in Ukraine 3 times and many people thought I was Israeli and they treated me very kindly. Certainly we can all agree the children do not deserve to be blown up. What is your opinion of this using the verse in Genesis above? Thanks." My opinion of this is that my opinion of this is very simple, Italian Zionist. I believe that God should do to countries like Ukraine what they did to the Jews. And what they want to do to the Jews to this day. I think they deserve to happen to them what they want to do to innocent people. That's my opinion. And as far as their children are concerned, I'm sorry to say this, Italian Zionist, but it is extremely likely that their children will grow up to be Nazi Jew haters as well, because they're Nazi Jew haters and their children will also be Nazi Jew haters. Is there a slight chance that they will somehow defy Ukrainian history and the hundreds of years of Ukrainian history and grow up and become righteous people? There may be some rare exceptions, but I can't look for a needle in the haystack when I'm hearing the cries of hundreds of thousands of my people who were burned, gassed, shot to death, tortured in the most burned, buried alive. I'm sorry. Those are the cries of the people that I care about. And yes, I want revenge against that. I want revenge against that, against those evil people. And I want the world to see that what happens to evil people who do things like that. Thank you, Italian Zionist. And now we go to... our great friend Confederate Kahanis. We haven't seen you in a while, Confederate Kahanis. Welcome back. It's always great to see you. Confederate Kahanis now writes, Dear Chaim, can you comment on the following ZooTubers if you are familiar with them? Thanks and God bless. Mark Dice. I think I've seen Mark Dice's page. You know, I'm pretty familiar with you. Obviously, I spend time on YouTube trying to figure out what we can do. You know, I've tried to figure out what we can do to expand especially our Hebrew program where we have a couple of million views in Hebrew. English-wise, we're not, you know, they take us down like crazy in English. In Hebrew, for some reason, they generally don't, and people complain in Hebrew about us. But generally in Hebrew, you know, in Hebrew, they take some of them down, but most of the time they haven't taken them down, strangely enough, despite the fact that they get many complaints. Why? I have no idea. Anyway, Mark Dice, I've seen his. You know, I wasn't very impressed. I thought it was just the usual Trump, Republican, Fox News type of commentary. You know, I wasn't impressed with him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know enough about him. But from what I saw, that's I wasn't impressed with him. Now, the second person, Confederate Kahanis writes about three people, and the second person is Wild Bill for America. Wild Bill for America is a different story altogether. I like Wild Bill. Wild Bill is a good guy. Wild Bill, I saw a video that Wild Bill did saying the greatest Islamic invention. He did a video called The Greatest Islamic Invention. And he really gives it to the Muslims. He says that they carried out 9/11, they murdered 3,000 people, they slaughter people, he mentions Taqiyya in Arabic. In Arabic, I don't know where Wild Bill learned all of this, but it's pretty good. I was impressed. He knew about taqiyya, which is deception, that in Arabic, that Muhammad orders the Muslims to engage in deception. It was really a good video. And then he says, but the greatest Islamic invention is the creation of a Palestinian people that never existed. And he goes into a whole thing explaining how there's never been a Palestine, there's never been a state of Palestine, there's never been a country like this or a land like this, and there's never been a Palestinian people, that this has just been invented to try to destroy Israel and hurt Israel and hurt the West as well, and the United States as well, of course. But great video that he did. So I like Wild Bill. Wild Bill I like. And Confederate Kahanis writes now, and Propaganda Busters. Propaganda Busters, I think I've seen them. I think he has a couple of channels. But I don't remember that much about him. I just don't remember enough about him, Confederate Kahanis. So that one, I don't want to comment on it if I don't remember enough to really say one way or the other. Thanks and God bless, Confederate Kahanis writes. Confederate Kahanis, it is great to see you again. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming back, and I'm glad you gave me a chance to praise Wild Bill. And now we go to the great Nekama, who is really a great JTFer. Nekama writes, and I quote, Dech Chaim, hope all is well. One, I have a hypothetical question. What if 100 Arab Nazis was somehow mysteriously executed for every Jew killed in a future terrorist attack? Would the Arabs somehow learn the lesson that Jewish blood is not cheap? Unquote. Nekama, there's no question that they would. We know this from history. In the 1930s, the Arabs started massacring Jews, with the encouragement, by the way, the British Nazis. The British encouraged the Arabs to riot and murder and commit pogroms against Jews. And 550 Jews were murdered between 1936 and 1939. 550 Jews were murdered. And they were rioting, the Arabs, to support Hitler and support the Nazis and say that we should not allow Jews who are trying to escape Nazi Europe to come into the land of Israel, against Jewish immigration and a Jewish state. And again, they murdered 550 Jews from 1936 to 1939. What finally put an end to that? And the reason they did it is because the Jewish leaders at the time, David Ben-Gurion, Bozo, if you look a picture of what David Ben-Gurion looks like, why I call him Bozo, you'll see why I call him Bozo. David Ben-Gurion, Chaim Weizmann, all the traitors that were running Israel, they had a policy called Havlaga. Havlaga means restraint. We've got to have self-restraint. When the Arabs attack us, we should have restraint. We should allow them to murder hundreds of Jews and have restraint. You know, which was also the philosophy that led to the Holocaust. You know, the Jews were very restrained, and we saw the consequences. Anyway, but thankfully there were good Jews that decided to rebel against this policy of Ben-Gurion, Weizmann, and the other Jewish traitors in the Jewish Agency and the Haganah, and those, they were traitors. But there was an organization called Ha'irgun Hatzvayi HaLeumi. Etzel is the initials in Hebrew, Etzel, Ha'etzel. And the head of it, the first head of the, Menachem Begin eventually became the head of the group, but the first head of it was David Raziel. And David Raziel, what he did it by himself, all by himself. He went, he made bombs, he put them in Arab marketplaces, he blew Arabs up. Hundreds of Arabs he blew up and killed in retaliation for what the Arabs were doing to the Jews. And guess what? In 1939, after he put bombs in Arab marketplaces and blew up hundreds of Arabs, all of a sudden the Arab rioting and the Arab pogrom stopped. That was the end of it. That solved the problem. All the diplomacy from Ben-Gurion and Weizmann and all the discussions and we've got to contact and contact this minister and contact this one and contact this sheikh and have negotiation and meet with them and sulcha and that. None of that worked. For 3 years, none of that worked. He put a few bombs in the right places. All of a sudden, the Arabs got the message. That was the end of the rioting and the pogroms. A little lesson to learn of the only language Arabs understand. Now, Kamana writes, and I quote too, I was very sad to hear about the death of Tesla. Tesla's life was worth more than all the Arab Nazis. By the way, Nekama's referring to the dog Tesla, who was murdered by the border police in Israel, crushed to death by the border police in Israel. Nekama writes, he was sad to hear about the death of Tesla. Tesla's life was worth more than all the Arab Nazis. I was never a dog person. However, during COVID, my kids bought a puppy. 2 years later, I can personally attest to the unconditional love given by dogs to their owners, provided the dog is brought up in a loving and caring environment. Dogs are unbelievably loyal. Unfortunately, most Jews have a lot to learn from dogs. All the best. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Tesla was very loyal. He gave his life to try to protect the house when he saw they were coming to destroy the house. He gave his life. He ran into the danger to protect the house. What a noble animal. And they murdered him. And I'm hoping that'll inspire people to finally support these Jewish heroes and to support them and their families and their animals and their communities so that we can save the land of Israel. And so that we can build a land where Jews will learn to be loyal and will learn to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. Thank you so much, Nekama. And now we go to our other longtime friend, Harel 156, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, give your opinion about death penalty for terrible acts of crime and or murder in Israel. Unquote. And of course I'm in favor of the death penalty. I think there should be Arab terrorists automatically should receive the death penalty. Automatically they should be executed. Automatically. And by the way, you're not required to give them a trial. You're not required to give them anything under Jewish law. That is not required. The two witnesses and all that is for another Jew. And even that is if you bring them before the Sanhedrin. But there is king's law. There's the government law that you can impose under halakha, particularly in times of emergency, where the king can impose rules, the king or the prime minister can impose rules and say execution. And Arab terrorists should automatically, Muslim terrorists, Arab terrorists, enemies of the Jewish people, automatic execution. Automatically should be executed. And believe me, that would be a deterrent. Harel now writes, how about death row in the USA? Do you justify criminals on death row for 30, 40 years, like Mumia Abu Jamal. Do you agree with Saudi style of executing 81 criminals in one day, saving a lot of food? Unquote. Of course I'm against death row, and I'm against the nonsense that takes place in the United States with the appeals. It's insanity. And of course, convicted murderers in the United States should also be executed. Absolutely. In every country. Someone who takes the life of an innocent person has forfeited their right to live. They have no right to live. Once you take the life of an innocent person, someone who does that has no right themselves to live. As far as the Saudi executing, I hate the Saudis. The Saudis are very cruel, evil, cowardly, corrupt, vicious, disgusting people, despicable people, and Jew haters of the worst type. But sometimes we can learn even from our worst enemies. And the Saudis executing 81 people in one day, yeah, hey, on that we can learn from them. You know, that is an appropriate way to deal with the situation. Harel now writes, also, would you consider making a CD of your best affirmative action stories? You could use it to raise money for the Hilltop Youth. This is Frada's suggestion. Maybe, I don't know that enough people are familiar with it in order to sell enough CDs to really make money with it, but, you know, alternatively, I want to put, maybe we could put these stories more and more on the internet, and maybe that'll attract people and bring people to our movement. That might help, so that's not a bad suggestion. Thank you, Harael, and now we go to our friend Roi. Roi writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, you said about Rafi Peretz and Aryeh Deri that they are not rabbis because Rafi danced with the pitches and Aryeh Deri supported Oslo. What are the other reasons that prevent people from getting the title of rabbi even when they have smicha? Unquote. Smicha is a rabbinic ordination. But let's say a rabbi decides one day that he's going to say, you know what? I'm going to let people intermarry, and I will perform intermarry. Of course, that's not a rabbi anymore once he does it, because he's going against Torah law. Or if a rabbi suddenly says, you can eat non-kosher food. Kosher food, we don't need to worry about that anymore. Or, that wouldn't be a rabbi anymore. He's going against Torah law or violating Shabbat or whatever. That, people would agree with, is not a rabbi anymore. That, but if a rabbi betrays the land of Israel and is willing to give parts of the land of Israel to our Arab Nazi enemies that want to destroy us, that is also not a rabbi. And if a rabbi says it's okay to obey orders to throw Jews out of their homes in the land of Israel so we can hand over that land to the Muslim Nazi terrorists, that's not a rabbi either. That's not any better than a rabbi saying you can violate Shabbat now, and you can violate the Chagim, and you can eat treif, and you can eat food that's taref, and you can intermarry and assimilate and so on. You know, a rabbi or anyone who supports throwing Jews out of their homes or who says you should obey orders to do it is not only not a rabbi, but a traitor, boged, rak boged oseh dvarim kaele. Only a traitor does things like that. And so, you know, and so, of course, Aryeh Deri and Shas, and the unforgivable what they did during Oslo, and Rafi Peretz, who danced with soldiers, and not only that, he encouraged thousands of Jews to... And by the way, Naftali Bennett and these others, they also said that you have to obey orders. They're traitors. Anyone who says that you can throw Jews out of their homes and destroy their homes and hand over their homes to the Muslim terrorists and surrender the land of Israel to our enemies, or to anyone, the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people, anyone who says this is a traitor and not a rabbi. Roi now writes, and I quote, what do you think about the climate crisis? Did they invent it for interest and money? And should Israel, which is responsible for 0.5% of global pollution, even take part in it? Thanks and God bless. Unquote. Of course it was invented. This is all nonsense. There is no climate crisis. It's complete nonsense. You know, I mean, we have brutally cold weather in the winter sometimes, and they keep telling us about global warming. It's complete nonsense. It's complete nonsense. And what is the result of this so-called global warming or climate change or the other insane things. The result is that we end up using more Arab oil and more oil from Muslims and Arabs and our enemies. That's the result. We don't drill, we don't discover, we don't use coal, which we should be using, we don't use all of the energy resources which would prevent the Arabs and the Muslims from getting trillions of dollars in petrol money from us. We would, if we used all the resources that are available in the Western world, the Arabs and the Muslims wouldn't have anybody to sell their oil to. But instead, we have these lies that are being taught and brainwashing that's going on, and the end result is we don't drill and we don't discover and we become paralyzed because of global warming and just insanity, complete insanity. Thank you, Roy. And now Joe Brandon writes, and I quote in Hebrew now. Oh, Joe, you're writing in Hebrew. Very interesting. Let's see. Okay. Ech heitem korim la Palestinim im hem hayu shchorim, which means what would you call the Palestinians if they were black? And of course, Joe wants me to say niggers. That's what he wants me to say. He wants to hear the word niggers. That's what Joe likes me to say. I would call them kushim. In Hebrew, we call them kushim. And Joe now writes the same question, I think, in Yiddish, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't read and I don't understand Yiddish, Joe. Thank you for all the questions, and I want to thank everybody for another program of Ask JTF, which, of course, I very much enjoy doing. This is a very critical time, and it's very, very important that we do what must be done to save the land of Israel, because JTF is on the front line. And all of us should be there backing the heroes that are on the front line fighting to save Israel. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.